back of his chair. There's relief in his face, and I appreciate it. "This Chad guy sounds like a real champ," he says. "I'm the moron that married him." I pick at the edge of the table to keep from meeting his eyes. Chad was not my best work. Not my best choice or the greatest guy I've ever dated, nor am I proud that I went through with the whole thing. But I did it, and I can't change it. I need to figure out how to accept all that. "I'm sure you had great intentions," Holden says. "I did. Want to know how deep his intentions ran?" I strum my fingers against the tabletop as I look up at him. "He left me by sticking a note to the kitchen table with a dollop of strawberry jelly." I blow out a breath and regret word vomiting all that. It was too deep, too raw and real. Opening up to Holden is too easy, and I probably just ruined the mood. He watches me for a few seconds before grinning. "He didn't even use grape? Rude." I smile, relieved that he didn't dig deeper. "Right? He didn't even use grape on his sandwiches. Big red flag right there," he says, pointing a finger my way. "You know, Grandma always said not to marry a man that cuts the crusts off his peanut butter and jelly sandwiches." "And why is that?" "Because that's an indication that someone doesn't like boundaries. I guess I should have listened to her. He even cuts the crusts off his grilled cheese." He gasps, his jaw falling to the table in mock horror. "That's serial killer shit right there. Hey, I don't know what he's been doing the last couple of years of his life." I take a napkin from the dispenser. "You might be right."
"So, why did you marry him? You didn't get serial killer vibes from the start?"
It's a question I've asked myself a million times because, down deep, I knew it wasn't right for me. I just ignored my gut and did it anyway. I look at Holden and frown. I tried to fill an overwhelming loneliness after Grandma died with something that I convinced myself was love. It wasn't, and I knew better. And that almost cost me everything. The heaviness of the conversation forces my eyes to the table. "Chad ruined me financially. I almost lost the honey house because of him. What a trade that would have been. The place I love most for the guy that loved me the least."
"I just want to say that I'm really sorry about your grandma. She was always so sweet."
My heart fills with a fondness for both Holden and his kind words about my grandmother. He didn't know her very well. We'd only stop in on our bike rides for lemonade here and there. But to know that he remembers her makes my heart swell. Holden stretches his legs out in front of him. The side of his calf bumps mine, and we both pull away quickly. As our eyes meet, Debbie appears out of thin air. She sets a drink down in front of each of us. "Need anything else?"
"We're good," Holden says. "Thank you."
"Great. I'll be back with your food shortly." She disappears into the kitchen again. I watch Holden unwrap his straw. He's so different from Chad. He asks questions about my life instead of just talking about himself. And even more shocking, he seems like he really wants the answers. When he laughs, it's with me and not at me. But I don't know why I'm surprised. It's exactly how I remember him to be. "What about you?" I ask, unwrapping my straw too.
"What about me?"
"What did you mean earlier when you said it was just easier to stay with your fiancé than to split up?" He snatches the shaker up in his hand.
"I'm not husband material."
Gonna need more than that." A sigh escapes his lips as he seems to come to terms with the fact that he'll have to answer me for real.
"I met Jessica in college. She's a great person, and she'll make someone a hell of a wife."
"Why not you?" I ask carefully. Debbie places a plate in front of each of us. She doesn't speak this time. Holden's nod is enough to let her know that we don't need anything else.
I pop a fry in my mouth and wait for Holden to answer. He looks at me and realizes I'm expecting a response. He takes a deep breath. "Jessica wanted this oversized, fluffy, off-white colored couch," he says, fumbling for words. "I wanted a black leather sofa with stainless legs. By the time we were ready to leave the store, we walked out of there with a brown corduroy piece that was so stiff you couldn't even really sit on it." I sit quietly and slice my fish. I have no idea what a couch has to do with why he's not husband material, as he called it. But the look on his face makes me wonder if he really knows either.
"I hated that thing," he says. "And I hated the lamp in the entryway with its little beads wrapped around the shade because I wanted to go beadless, like any man I know would, and she wanted the thing to be dripping with them. So we compromised. And that was the day I realized that we were compromising our lives so much that I didn't even recognize mine or hers. Instead of taking my golden retriever life and mixing it with her poodle life and getting a golden doodle, we turned into a mutt." He shrugs, as if to say, "There you go, it's that easy." Except I know it's not that easy. It never is. "Yeah, I call bullshit," I say, pointing a fry his way. A dollop of ketchup falls off the end and splatters on the table. "Total bullshit, actually." He takes a napkin and wipes up the ketchup. There's something about the situation that amuses me to no end. "Thanks for your input." He wads the ketchup-smeared napkin into a ball and tosses it to the side. "You might be right, though."
"About what part?"
He sits back in his chair and folds his arms over his chest. "That whole thing I just spit at you about the couches might be bullshit."
I drop the fry in my hand and sit back, too. My arms cross over my chest, mirroring his posture.
"Then what's the truth?"
"I don't know. I probably always knew that Jessica and I weren't right, but she wanted to get married, and the look in her eye on every holiday wore on me."
"Sounds like you have some layers to peel back there."
"You mean in therapy? Probably."
I smile at him, my insides warm as he returns it. A comfortable silence descends upon us. While he takes out his phone and busies himself with the text, I consider what he just said. I realize that we aren't that different. I, too, have layers to peel back, and they aren't that dissimilar from his.
Not really. Not when you boil it down.
He sits up and lifts a fry in the air. "If I can get the job at Montgomery Farms, that will help."
"Why?"
He ponders this before answering. Shifting his weight in his seat, he sighs.
"Because it will be something I did on my own that my father can't criticize at all."
"Why would he criticize you? You're successful from what I can tell."
He gives me a slight grin. "He thinks I'm an idiot for going into veterinary medicine to start with. He equates it to some small town, small mind thing because of Pap, and that I should have been a heart surgeon like him. Something worthy of a Mackenzie."
I furrow a brow. "Being a vet is a really honorable thing."
He shrugs. "He hates that I was fired. Didn't even listen as to why. He also thinks I'm an idiot for breaking off my engagement, and he loathes the fact that I'm here and not working in some half-assed clinic in Phoenix just so I'm employed."
"Well, being employed is kind of a good thing," I tease.
"True. But I want to make an actual step to something better, not simply scurry around from one job to another. If I could just get this job in Florida, he won't be able to say a word about it. It's the most prestigious company in the country, maybe the world."
I take a bite of my sandwich. "When will you know if you get it?"
"Soon, I hope."
"What would you do?" His eyes light up, a twinkle shining in the depths of his irises.
"I'd be working at a rescue center near Orlando. My mom and I went there when I was a little kid, and we both fell in love with it. I told her then that I'd work there someday."
He smiles at the memory.
"They do wildlife studies and rehabilitation, Their community outreach is first class.
I watch him come alive. It's clear this means something to him. He looks how I feel when I think of the honey house.
My heart tugs as I watch him mull over his plight.
I know if Montgomery Farms would just talk to him, they'd hire him. He's passionate and intelligent. He's kind and funny. They'd be crazy not to snap him right up.
I really hope you get the job, Holden. I take a bite of my fry.
Do you think you have a good chance?
He shrugs. They're super picky about who they hire and have this insane vetting process, pun intended, to get accepted, he says with a grin. But if you get hired, they literally pay for you to have all of these extra qualifications and opportunities. So I get why they are really choosy. The wait is just nerve-wracking, you know? Especially since I might not have a great reference from my last job and now have a new living arrangement.
I'm sure it'll be okay, I offer. Will it, though?
Or will they look at me and be like, hey, this guy was doing great but lost his job and fiancé in the course of a month. He's probably going through something that we don't want to be a part of.
Well, that does sound bad when you put it like that.
We both laugh, the sound of our voices mixing together over our fish. I'll give you a reference, I joke. I'm a great personal reference giver. I gave one to Debbie's sister Donna, and she got a job at the bank. Probably because of me.
Oh, I'm sure it was because of you, absolutely.
Whatever, it probably was. I come across as genuine and a really salt-of-the-earth kind of person, I say, popping a fry into my mouth. Besides, we've basically been engaged since you asked me to marry you with a giant candy ring. He laughs.
I might need you to be my fiancé for a while longer, to convince Montgomery I'm a good guy and that he should hire me.
I'd have him eating out of the palm of my hand. I wink.
You'd probably be vice president of the company before it was over.
Holden takes a bite of his sandwich and watches me over the top of it. There's something about the way he looks at me with a twinkle in his eye that makes me squirm. In a good way, I think.
Chapter 5. Holden. Well, there he is. I wonder if it's a thing in Tennessee to greet people before they even get in the door. Yesterday, it was Dottie. Today, it's Joe, the man who apparently changes the floor mats. It's nice to meet you, Joe says. He heads toward where I'm standing in the middle of the reception area. His white mustache curls slightly toward his eyes, and I wonder if it's to draw attention to the insane, almost purple color of his irises. He extends a hand, and we shake. You look so much like your grandfather that I would have known you anywhere, he says. I've heard that before. I've also heard that I have his acute ability to tell bad jokes. He grins. Let's hope not. We went golfing a few weeks ago. He told the dumbest joke about knees. Kid knees? That one. He points at me. I guess you've heard it too. I think everyone he's met in the last year has heard it. He releases my hand but places his on my shoulder. His smile grows wider. I also heard you were getting cozy with Sophie Bates last night at Tank's. What? I look over my shoulder at Dottie. She just shrugs. I'm staying at her bed and breakfast, and we went to Tank's for a bite to eat. Joe laughs. Small town chatter. Better get used to it. Either way, I'm glad you and Sophie hit it off. She's a dandy. And Dottie said that aside from being late yesterday, you guys hit it off too. She also mentioned that you love Bertie's apple pie as much as I do. My head drops to the side as I take in Dottie's smug grin. Is that true, Dottie? She holds her hands out to the side. The look on her face proves she knows she's been caught in a fib and doesn't know what to do about it. I raise a brow and turn back to Joe. I was on time yesterday, Joe. I was here all day, and I assure you that I haven't tried Bertie's apple pie yet, even though she did deliver one yesterday. He gasps. Dottie gasps in mock horrification. Dottie May, Joe says. Are you holding out on me?
You little shit,
she says with a laugh. She smacks my shoulder as I walk behind her. She shakes her head. Lord help me. I'm going to head into the back and start sorting deliveries before I fire you both. We laugh as she marches through the archway into the supply room. She throws her hands in the air, mumbling to herself about not trusting insolent men. Tell your grandfather I said hello, Joe says. Will do, I tell him. Joe leaves with a floor mat stuck under an arm. With him gone and Dottie still in the back, the building is eerily quiet. I slip off my jacket and hang it on the hook by the window. Then I grab a seat on one of the wooden stools behind the desk. I've just reached for the schedule when I notice a small stain on the edge of my shirt. Lifting the hem, I see that it's gravy from breakfast. Chuckling, I drop the fabric. I had a suspicion that Sophie was a good cook from watching her in the kitchen last night, but I had no idea she could whip up a meal like she did this morning. From scratch, sausage gravy. Biscuits that seemed like they were handmade this morning, and eggs so fluffy that they were like pillows, awaited me when I woke up. I could totally get used to that. I could totally get used to other things, too. Things like having her in my life again. I've had women in my life in various roles, but none I've enjoyed being around quite like her. She was my first best friend. When we toilet papered Dottie's house, she was my partner in crime. Just thinking about it makes me laugh. Glancing down, I see the schedule is open. An oversized green sticky note is slapped in the center. I don't know how I missed it yesterday. Holden, if I haven't called by now, I'm reeling in king mackerel the size of my body, and the phone service in the Gulf stinks. Hope Dottie is treating you well. If she gets out of hand, bring her a donut in the morning. It's a trick that's worked for years. Love, Pap. Beneath that, there's a circle with a different set of handwriting inside. I can read this, you know. Dottie. I grin and stick the note in my pocket. I'm about to take another drink of my coffee when the door to the clinic bursts open. A boy, probably around 16 or so, comes in. His eyes are wide, panic clearly set in as he carries a ferret to me. Where's Dr. Fred? He asks. I get off my stool. He's not in today. Can I help you?
Are you a vet?
Yes. I round the corner of the desk and do a quick visual exam of the ferret. It appears fine as it squirms around in its yellow harness. I'm Dr. Holden. I'm filling in for Dr. Fred for a while. Is there something wrong with your buddy here? He strokes the ferret's head. This is Fidget. She's been pooping blood all morning, and, I don't know what to do. His voice trembles. His hands shake as he holds Fidget out to me. I take his pet. Her eyes are clear, her fur soft and shiny. There's no weird discharge from her nose or ears or around her mouth. Tell you what, I say. Let's go into an exam room and have a look at her. He forces a swallow.
Okay.
Dottie comes around the corner.
Hey, Patrick. Hi, Miss Dottie. Is Fidget okay? She asks.
Patrick looks up at me.
I don't know.
We're going to have a look at her. I smile at Patrick, but she seems pretty playful. Has she been active? He follows me into one of the exam rooms and closes the door behind us.
She's been acting fine, he says. I mean, I lost her for about an hour last night. She got out of my room and escaped. She's a freaking Houdini.
Where did you find her?
In the bathroom.
I roll the ferret over in my hands and check her tummy, and then I look at her backside. Is this the blood? I point to some red residue near her bottom.
Yes.
I press my hand on her belly to feel around. She thinks I'm playing and nibbles at my hand.
What did you do when you found her? I ask him. Well, I figured she wanted a bath. She loves water. So we did that, and then... He thinks back. I took her back to my room while I went down for dinner. Then I took a snack up and watched a movie and let her run loose in my room until I went to bed. What did you snack on? Cinnamon gummy bears? Sugar-free? I ask. He wrinkles his nose.
No. Do they even make them sugar-free?
They do, and it's important because xylitol is an additive to sugar-free foods that's very toxic to animals, including ferrets. I take a swab out of a container and capture some of the residue. Is there any chance she's gotten into any cleaning products? Any other food items? Anything she shouldn't have been, besides the candy? He shakes his head. No. She's in her cage unless I'm with her. And Mom doesn't let me have food in my room. I had to sneak the gummy bears in there. That's good. I hand Fidget back to Patrick. Hold on to her for me, and I'll be right back. He nods as I take the swab and leave the room. The lab my grandfather has set up is across the hall. It only takes a few minutes to confirm my suspicions. I wash my hands before I return to the exam room. Patrick is talking softly to Fidget when I enter. It seems to me that your friend here likes the same snacks you do, I say. Huh? I smile softly. Go home. Give her another bath. And next time you have gummy bears, keep them out of her reach. I put my hand on Fidget's head and give it a gentle shake. She's a fan, too.
Really? Oh, that's great,
Patrick says, bringing the pet up to his chin and nuzzling it.
She's gonna be fine, then?
She'll be fine. She might have a bit of a sore tummy, though, because cinnamon is pretty strong. Keep an eye on her, but I think she's going to be good as new. He looks at me like I just hit a game-winning home run. I think he's trying to decide whether he should hug me or not.
Thanks, Doctor. Seriously, you just saved my life.
I don't know about that, but you're welcome. I open the door. Now go see Dottie before you leave, okay?
Got it.
His grin splits his cheeks as he heads to the counter. I wash my hands in the sink next to the exam table. I'm drying them off when my phone buzzes in my pocket. I take a peek into the lobby. It's empty. Hello? I say.
Is this Dr. McKenzie?
Yes, it is.
Hello, Holden. This is Timothy Montgomery from Montgomery Farms.
I close the door. My heartbeat quickens as I switch the phone to my other hand. My palms sweat, and I make a concerted effort not to drop the phone.
Hi, Dr. Montgomery. How are you? I'm good, thank you. I'm calling because you've applied for the rehabilitation position at our facility in Orlando. Is that right?
It is. My voice cracks more than it should, and I wince at the sound of it.
I'm honored to be considered.
Papers shuffle in the background.
Well, I'm honored to let you know that you've made it to the final two candidates, he says.
My jaw pops open. I run a hand through my hair at the realization that it's a possibility that this whole damn thing might just actually happen.
Holy shit.
That's amazing, I say. Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome. I founded this organization 40 years ago, as you may already know. It's incredibly personal to me. My passion project, if you will. Just a little backstory. I was working for a high-profile horse racing farm fresh out of college. I was disenchanted with the way these glorious animals were treated once their money-making days were over. So I partnered with a few investors and created Montgomery Farms.
I knew that. I've read everything there is about the company over the last 15 years. My mother used to buy me animal magazines, and there were always articles about Montgomery Farms. I remember one in particular about finding your passion. A small segment was from Dr. Montgomery himself, and how he'd found his working with retired racehorses. He wrote so passionately, so from the heart, so much like what I felt inside myself, that I knew I'd do anything to work for that company someday. It's a world-renowned organization, sir. Thank you. As I said, it's very, very close to my heart. It's a family to me, and not just a business. It's incredibly important that everyone on the payroll fit into the vision of a close-knit community, working together to support the animals we're caring for, as well as each other. This is very much a team effort. I force a swallow. That makes perfect sense. Papers move around again. The sound causes my anxiety to spike. I plead silently with myself not to say anything stupid. One thing I appreciate about you, Holden, besides your impressive answers to the essays on the application, is the fact that you're a family man. My shoulders fall. This is where my life bites me in the ass. I clear my throat. Of course I am. My brain starts stringing together potential sentences that aren't off-putting. People separate all the time. Surely he understands things like that. My wife and I have been married for 45 years this coming May. It's that kind of commitment I'm looking for in an employee, he says. And maybe he doesn't understand things like that. Oh, shit. Definitely, I say. So many young people in today's world don't understand the concept of commitment. Seeing something out to the end. Standing behind your word and working things out, rolling with the punches. People nowadays quit as soon as things get hard. My throat closes. It's probably a defense mechanism, but one I'm grateful for at the moment. At least it prevents me from burying myself deeper. I love that you're starting a family. It says so much about you. I shouldn't say this, but it gives you an edge, he says. Are you married yet? You filled this out a while ago. I close my eyes. No. No, I'm not. Not yet. My wife is wanting to redo our vows next year. I know what it's like to have a bride wanting a perfect day. He chuckles. When is the big day, if you don't mind my asking? Soon. As soon as the word is out of my mouth, I cringe. The day isn't soon. It's not happening. The answer is never. But I can't say that, because if I do, I've lost my edge. And I'll end up back in Phoenix, working for someone else and listening to my father tell me how I've disappointed him yet again. I can't do that. I won't. I'll rent a boat and sail off into the Pacific first. That's great, he says. That's very good news. I'd like to see the final candidates at work. Get an idea of how you prepare for each day, solve problems, operate under pressure. Also, to see how well we collaborate, that sort of thing. Do you think that's possible? I glance around the clinic and wish for the first time since coming here that I were back at my old job. Well, actually, I'm in Tennessee right now, I say. My grandfather needed a helping hand at his clinic for a while. Oh, point in your favor. I love the spirit of that. His chair squeaks. Could I come there? Would that be a problem? I think the second candidate is in Kentucky, so I could make a week out of it and have an answer sooner than I anticipated. I think that would be fine. I'll get back to you with a day once I talk with my secretary and my wife. I'm going to shoot for midweek next week. He sighs in satisfaction. Thanks for taking my call, Dr. McKenzie. We'll talk soon. Thank you for calling. Goodbye. I end the call and then bury my head in my hands. Montgomery Farms wants me. They want me. The me, at least from a month ago. The bottom of my stomach falls to the floor. I am so screwed.
Chapter 6. Sophie. I am so screwed. The moon lights up the kitchen in an eerie glow. Grandma always loved the moon. She said your problems always seem worst at night, and the moon is your light, your reminder that the sun will come back up and things will be better. I turn the bottle around in my hands and look at the label. The corner of the sticker describing the type of wine is starting to lift on its own. With nothing better to do, except for the things I've done all day with little or no success, I pick at it. I pry it off slowly, an inch at a time, and relish in the satisfaction of watching it release from the glass. The motion is soothing. It gives me a channel to focus on something that isn't overdue statements and impending taxes, and the sense of imminent failure if I don't figure something out. My thoughts trace back through the day, from calling the treasurer's office to confirm that they denied my appeal, to the hours I spent combing through the basement. I searched through nearly everything down there in the hope of finding something I could sell to help make ends meet. There was nothing worth anything substantial. The only good thing about today was the Ingrams' sweet smiles as they checked out this morning. The label breaks free as a whole piece, and I slap it onto the counter. "How mad would you be, Grandma, if I got a loan?" I say out loud. Like, really, really mad? Or kind of mad? Because I remember how you were so against getting loans and how hard you and Grandpa worked to pay this thing off, but I don't know what else to do. I take the wine glass I got earlier and pour myself a drink. Then I pour it down my throat. The tartness of the alcohol reminds me of the time I tried to drink apple cider vinegar to lose weight. I'm not sure what's worse. What's worse than both of those experiences would be going to the bank for money to help me out of this mess. It's the easy answer. It's the obvious solution. But every time I start to seriously consider it, a heaviness sneaks up on me. Not only would I be going against Grandma's wishes, but I'd also have to face the ladies at the bank. They'd know why I need a loan, and that's humiliating. I could hear the gossip now. Poor Sophie Bates, needing money after Chad robbed her blind. Nah, not doing that. The glass clinks against the countertop at the same time the front door creaks. My head snaps to the clock. My stomach tightens as I hear Holden's voice call out my name. Sophie? The sound echoes around the honey house. The spicy scent of the kitchen, a man's deep voice, and the warmth of the wine in my belly combine to make me a little lightheaded. I pour another drink. I'm in the kitchen. Before I get the last syllable out, he rounds the corner. His forehead is crinkled, his lips pressed together, and the lines grow deeper as he takes me in. You look like you've had a hell of a day, he says. You know what? If you want to judge me, just head on out of here. I bring the glass to my lips. Leave me with my wine. Judge you? Let's commiserate. Got another glass? I point at the cabinet by the refrigerator. Over there. Bad day for you too, I take it. You could say that. He glances over his shoulder as he pulls a glass out of the cupboard. Do you have anything other than wine? You don't like wine? Not particularly. Well, me either. I take a sip and flinch. This stuff is particularly awful. It's what I think drinking starter fluid would taste like. He straddles the stool next to me and sits at the island. The leathery scent of his cologne licks at my skin, and I pull my arm away for good measure. He must notice because his brows pull together, but he doesn't point it out. If you don't like it, why are you drinking it? He asks. Because it's all I have. Good answer. He takes the bottle and fills up his glass. He holds it in the air and inspects it like I used to do when we were kids, and I'd steal Liv's drink. I'd hold it up like that to check for bits of food and backwash floating around. It's clean, I point out. He sets it back down. I was just thinking about how this is the exact color of the cinnamon bear goo that a ferret shit out today. Gagging, I lean away from him. He means it as a joke, but somehow it triggers the flames from the wine, and I start choking for real. My cheeks heat from both the lack of air and the heat in his gaze as he watches me gasp. For half a second, I consider that he might think I need CPR. That makes me choke harder. I lean farther away to discourage him from patting my back or otherwise making contact, because that will only lift me to the next level of choking. I don't even know what that might be. Death, maybe? Are you okay? He asks. Fine, I say, holding a hand against my chest as the air begins to stream more evenly into my lungs. Sorry, that visual was just disgusting. He sips the wine, looking halfway proud of himself for grossing me out. Is that what you do all day? I ask, gathering myself. What? I don't know. Inspect ferret poop? I'll do whatever duty calls me to do. And today it was making sure teenage boy's pet ferret wasn't bleeding from its ass. He holds the glass in front of him and swirls the liquid around. The boy, Patrick, I think his name was. Thinks I'm a rock star now, though. So there's that. Now I get it. You love your job because people think you're brilliant and it feeds your ego. He raises his glass to me before taking a drink. I shake my head and try not to watch the way his Adam's apple bobs in his throat. The refrigerator hums softly, but other than that, the house is quiet, whether it's from the moonlight coming in through the windows or the wine hitting my veins. I don't know, but a warmth settles over me. It's a slight haze that I welcome with open arms. What's all that? Holden nods to the stuffed file folder next to me. I eye it like it's my mortal enemy. A bunch of stuff I have to deal with. Like it's none ya. Huh? It's none ya business. He rolls his eyes. So clever. Yeah, well, I'm a woman of many talents. My gaze drops to the folder again. The longer I look at it, the tighter the back of my neck becomes. The irritation builds and builds until I'm reaching over and pulling the pile in front of me. Want to know what this is? Here, I'll show ya. I reach in and take out the tax bills. I slide them in between us. This is the thing that's going to put me out of business. It's due by next month or I'm kaput. He takes a look at it and whistles between his teeth. Right? Thanks, Chad, you fucker. Holden picks up the sheet of paper. Shit, Sophie. Is that for just 1 year? It's spring and fall for this year and last, and maybe fall from the year before that. I don't even know anymore. This is due soon. No shit. I thought I'd be able to recoup some of it through bookings, but a place opened in Rockery. The Sweet Tea? What kind of a name even is that for bed and breakfast? I scoff. Anyway, they're pulling just enough of my business to let me not quite get ahead. He doesn't laugh or smile, or even almost crack a grin. I don't blame him. It's pretty mind-blowing that someone can get themselves into this kind of situation. Peering out the window and ignoring Holden's gaze on the side of my face, I chastise myself for getting into this mess. In my defense, it's like it happened overnight. 1 minute I'm conquering the world, having a savings account with a decent little padding. The next minute I'm in a hole a mile deep. What the hell happened? I squeeze my eyes shut. Chad happened. Chad happened and I haven't found my footing. He found me at a time when I was reeling from the loss of Grandma and leaving Florida and feeling so alone. As I was wondering what my future looked like, and was secretly scared about the possibilities, he waltzed into town and held me tight and said everything I needed to hear. I took the bait. He reeled me in
and left me and my savings account gutted. Damn it. And damn me. I look at Holden, ready to change the subject. What happened to you today? Dottie give you a hard time? He pulls his eyes away from me. Not any more than any other time I've been around her. He downs the rest of his wine. Want a refill? Sure. Tastes like expired mouthwash, but what the hell? We sit quietly again, both lost in our thoughts. I take a few opportunities to sneak a glance at him, because even if I'm having a bad day, he's still cute. And in my house, and I have to take what little pleasures life offers me. I heard about that job I was telling you about, he says. The one in Florida that I hoped would provide me with a spot I could use for vacations? Please don't tell me you blew it. I was counting on that. He grins. You have so much faith in me. I sigh. You blew it, didn't you? No, not yet anyway. Good. What did they say then? That they love you and think you're a wizard and you start tomorrow? I sigh. That's it, isn't it? You're leaving and you're sad that you have to go. I pat him on the shoulder. You'll be okay. I know I'm hard to leave. A fit of laughter topples out of my lips. It's the wine, I know, but I can't stop it. A few seconds later and he's chuckling right along with me. How much of this have you drunk? Holden asks. Not much. I'm a lightweight. I never drank. I remember you putting down quite a few beers back in the day, he teases. I cover my face with my hands. Don't go there. What? Don't remind you how you assured me that you drank all the time and got so shit-faced that I had to carry you into your friend's house? Yeah, don't remind me of that. I peek through my fingers. Not my best moment. He stretches his long legs out in front of him. Well, I'm not living mine right now. Get this. I'm one of two final candidates for the job I want, and I actually have an edge. That's great. He grimaces. Yeah, except that my edge comes from the fact that I'm getting married. You are? I try to recall that bit of information, but come up empty. Surely he would have mentioned a small detail like marriage. No, I'm not getting married. He scoffs. But then how are you? Oh. My face falls. I can feel the heat in my cheeks. I see. Big problem. Yeah, big problem indeed. Maybe you could just tell them it didn't work out with the... What's her name? He props an elbow on the edge of the table and rests his chin in his hand. I could, but I'd likely lose not just the edge, but the opportunity altogether. I think you're being a little dramatic, Doc. I make a face and take another long sip of my wine. The more I drink of it, the better it tastes. And the better Holden looks. If it's possible that he could look better than he did in those stupid sweatpants the other night. He snorts. I wish. They said married people demonstrate an ability to commit and see problems through. I can only imagine what they'd think if I tell them I ended an engagement and a job. He has a solid point, but I decide not to tell him that. It's not going to help much. Instead, I try to spin it around. Maybe you're looking at this all wrong, I say, pointing at him. My finger bounces in the air, so I put it back on the countertop. Isn't it possible that they'll see you as a good decision maker who knows when to pull the plug? That's a very good quality to have, very useful. His head twists in his palm so he can see me. Are you always a glass half full kind of person? Only when it's other people. Totally a half-empty kind of girl when it's my own life. He laughs and sits up. There's still a crinkle of worry at the corners of his eyes. I wish I could say something to make him feel better, but I can't think of anything more than I've already tossed out there. If this doesn't work out, I'm going to be screwed. I'm going to have to go home, get a random-ass job that's just treading water, and... I could just see it now, he says with a sigh. See what? His face twists in disgust. Dad letting me know what a failure I am and having to listen to that bullshit? He runs a hand down his face. Shit. Okay, so if that happens, is it really a bad thing? I mean, maybe you'll find something great. Maybe it'll be a new open door. He flashes me a look. Maybe, Miss Glass half full. But then it's starting from the bottom somewhere else and spending the next 10 years working my way up for nothing, really. I'll look up and be 40 and have nothing to show for it but paychecks. It would be a complete setback. He pours what's left of the wine into his glass. Montgomery Farms would be a huge step in the right direction. My work would be relevant, game-changing even. Their work contributes to studies and new methods of animal care. I have to get it. I hop off my stool and head to the cupboard. The wine is sloshing around in my stomach, and I need to find something to snack on. I grab a box of crackers and carry them to the island. But let me play devil's advocate here, and say you don't get it. What will happen? You'll go back to Phoenix? I guess. I have an apartment there still. Okay, so that's a plus, right? And you could find a position close to where you want to live, maybe by your friends. Could be cool. He holds on to the edge of the island and tips his weight so the stool is balanced on the back legs. But I really don't want to do that. I have this itch to go somewhere new. Somewhere I can really figure it out, you know? Yeah, I wanted to do that once too. What happened? My heart sinks into my stomach. Regret and sadness creep over me like a poison, filling a valley. Life, I guess, I say. I look up at Holden. There's a softness in his eyes that makes my throat tighten. Nervously, I remove a couple of crackers and offer the box to him. He takes it from me. I've never really talked about this to anyone, not even my brother and sister, although they could piece it all together if they tried hard enough. Maybe they have. I don't know. But the idea of saying it out loud to Holden, a man whom I won't have to see for much longer, feels freeing. I take a deep breath. I'd always said I wanted to run this place, I tell him. From the time I was a little girl, I wanted to be like my grandma. But I got older and felt stifled here. Holden nods slowly. He sets the stool back down on all four legs. I applied to Florida State and got accepted. I think Grandma thought it was a phase or something. She sat me down a couple of weeks before I was supposed to leave and said she'd sign this place over to me the next day. She said she was getting old and that she wanted to see me take over, that it would give her peace. I look at the floor. I left anyway. He reaches out and touches the top of my hand. His palm is warm and soft, and he takes it away too quickly. I got there and hated it, I say around the lump in my throat. But I was too proud to call home and tell Grandma that. And she died before I could. Shit. He stands, and I think he might reach for me. I hold my breath. I'm sorry, Sophie. I exhale. It's fine. It's not fine. It won't ever be fine. I left her. I made a bad decision after a terrible decision, mostly out of pride. I was so freaking stupid, and the regret I feel about that gnaws at me every day. You know what you need? Holden asks. Yes, I say quickly. A knight in shining armor with 5 grand. Do you know what you need? He opens his mouth, but snaps it shut. Slowly, his eyes widen to the size of dinner plates. A smile that doesn't instill confidence in me spreads across his cheeks, too. Actually, I do. I need a wife.
Chapter 7. Holden. Sophie holds my gaze for a long second.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. My throat goes dry as my mind begins to take itself seriously. Too seriously. So seriously, in fact, that it starts to run certain scenarios in which we both could come out with what we need with nothing but a wedding. It occurs to me that this idea has been percolating in the back of my mind for a few days. Here and there, little blips of imagery would filter through my brain about what life might be like, being married to Sophie. I thought it was just a giant what-if game, like brains are known to play. But maybe it's not that. Maybe it was trying to tell me something. To marry her. I shake my head in the hope that the movement will jolt some sense into me. But when I stop, the same visions are running through my head. She turns toward the sink and raises the window. Cool air blasts into the room. I wonder if it's really that chilled or if my body temperature is just abnormally high as I think about marrying Sophie Bates. I gulp. That air feels good, doesn't it? She says. Her back is to me. Her shoulders are rigid. I wonder if she's thinking what I'm thinking, because there's a definite stress in my back that's making me stand tall, too. Shit. I clear my throat. Sophie?
Yeah?
I have a crazy idea. She takes a deep breath.
Why does the sound of that terrify me in a very real way?
Well, I plant my hands on the counter as I watch for any kind of tell as to what she's thinking. I think I might have found a way to solve both of our problems. She spins around and grabs the edge of the sink behind her. Her jaw is set.
You are out of your freaking mind if you're thinking what I think you're thinking.
I hold a hand in front of me. It could work. Think about it. The longer I think about it, the more I think it could. It would. And the deeper my belief in the possibilities of this admittedly crazy idea, the more energy flows through my veins. I walk toward her slowly. Each step I take causes her chest to rise and fall quicker. Mine too. Look. I know this sounds insane, I say carefully, but think about it.
Think about what, exactly?
You need a knight in shining armor and 5 grand, right? She nods, narrowing her eyes. And I need a wife. Something about the way this comes out snaps her out of her haze. She comes alive with a laugh.
You are out of your damn mind.
She squares her shoulders to mine. The sweetness of the wine on her breath, mixed with the disbelief on her face, makes me grin.
This isn't funny.
No, it's not.
You do realize you're insinuating that I could be your wife, right?
I do.
You're nuts. And you're even nutser if you think you are my knight in shining armor.
She marches to the counter behind me. After swiping up my glass and the empty wine bottle, she stomps across the kitchen. Looking me straight in the eye, she tosses the bottle into the trash.
Did you stop at the bar on your way home? She asks.
This town has a bar.
Good point. Did you do drugs then?
She places the glass in the sink.
Because there's something seriously wrong with you, Doc.
I shouldn't laugh. I know it. There's really nothing funny about this, except watching her be so defiant. Fuck it if she isn't pretty when she's fired up. She narrows her gaze at my outburst. I stick my tongue in my cheek. You know, Jessica was much nicer about it when I asked her to marry me.
Because she probably liked you.
Oh, like you don't like me. She snorts in disgust, but it's not real. We both know it.
I suppose in Jessica's defense, you probably never repossessed her engagement ring and ate it in front of her before.
I laugh again. If I knew how much that was going to haunt me, I would have let you keep it.
As you should have.
The air between us moves as if it has absorbed some of the energy blasting between us, because there is energy. Something comfortably electric between Sophie and me that I can't deny. And that's why this marriage of convenience could be the ticket. That's why this could work, Sophie.
Why? Because you owe me a ring?
I ignore her attempt at deflection. No, because we get along. We have a history and friendship and a certain built-in trust level. She places a hand on her hip and blinks as if she's bored. And we both like my grandpa? It's the first thing that pops in my head. And we enjoy spending time together.
We do?
Yes, we do. You know it. We have fun together. She rolls her eyes.
You're not totally terrible to be around, but I don't know that I'd go all out and say you are fun.
Yes, I am. You smile the whole time we're together. Or most of the time, I say when she opens her mouth to argue. See? It's the perfect, or as perfect as we're going to find, setup. I'm not going to have my feelings hurt if you yell at me for leaving my socks on the bathroom floor.
I'm not doing your laundry.
Good, because I have a system, and I quite like it. This seems to calm her down. She crosses her arms over her chest, but the panic in her eyes fades. I'm afraid to say anything else and ruin the progress I think I just made. The more I think about this, the more perfect this crazy idea becomes. It would be a symbiotic relationship, a mutually beneficial situation in which we would both come out smiling on the other side. That never happens. But it could. If Sophie will marry me. Holy shit.
I bet you at least got down on one knee when you asked Jessica to marry you,
she teases. I grin. I did. And I'm more than happy to do that right now if it'll help.
It won't. It would just tempt me to kick you, and we don't need that.
I laugh. We stand in the middle of the kitchen and watch one another, feeling each other out. The longer it goes with neither of us speaking, the more it feels like we're waiting on the other to break the ice. Finally, after a couple of minutes, she sighs.
You aren't really serious, are you?
She asks. Am I? I do a quick evaluation of the situation. She can help me get the job, and I can help her find some relief. Neither of us would take it seriously, so there's no harm there. And she's pretty great to look at, which doesn't hurt either. Yes, I say with conviction, my mind made up. I am. She looks at the ceiling.
I don't even want to get married right now, especially to you.
And why not me? Her brows furrow, but she releases them. The gesture seems like she's letting go of more than that.
Why not you? She asks. Because if I get married again, I want the fairy tale. I want the real knight in shining armor. I want a man that wants to live the life I live and be happy in it. And that might be stupid. It probably is. But I want it.
There's not a lot I can say to that. She's right to want those things. And she's also right that I'm not any of them. But that isn't what this is. Please be reminded that you needed a two-part solution. You wanted a knight and 5 grand. They don't necessarily come together. So if I can provide half the equation, it will free you up to focus on the other half. She puts a hand on her hip. That does help your case. She holds my gaze for a long moment before beginning to pace through the kitchen. I don't know whether to give her a few minutes to let this sink in or to keep showing her how perfect this whole thing can be, because the more I think about it, the more I'm sold that this is the answer to everything. This is the reason for me coming to Honey Creek. The universe put me here. It all makes sense now. Sophie stops mid-pace and spins around to face me. Why can't you just find a girl somewhere and have her pretend to be your fiancé? Don't you have a friend or an ex that you're on good terms with that will do this for you? It seems so much easier. You are my friend. I sigh. Fine. Montgomery is coming next week, and I don't have that kind of time to find a woman here and ask her to pretend to be my fiancé. That's not something you can just go into the lemonade and throw out there. Oh, but you can ask me to be your pretend fiancé? No. I asked you to be my wife. She glares at me. It's softened with a hidden smile, and that's encouraging enough to continue with my proposition. And pretending to be engaged won't work here. Montgomery is coming here. Everyone will know that we just got engaged. All it takes is for someone to say something about it, and he won't trust me. He'll know something is up. He thinks I'm on the verge of actually getting married. Her shoulders fall as she watches me with what I think. Hope is possibility. I can't believe I'm asking you this, I tell her. If someone had told me a few days ago that I'd be asking a woman to marry me, I'd have laughed in their face. So why are you then? I ponder that for a moment. Because we both have problems, and we can solve them if we work together. We've always been good teammates. Remember when we convinced the pool in town to stay open late on the 4th of July so we could host a pool party? She grins. I forgot about that. And when we got that old guy to pay us like $25 to mow his grass. So we could buy snow cones, she says, finishing my story with a laugh. Exactly. This is just like that. Just a more adult version of working together to get what we want. She paces a slow circle, rubbing her temples with her fingers. I hold my breath and watch her totally overthink this whole thing. Finally,